Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This show is brought to you by The Makery, the podcast network for makers.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. It's your host, Barry White of The Knife Talk Show. Welcome to the show, everybody. It's Knife Talk. We're here every week. It's myself, Craig Lockwood of Chop Knives, Mareko Momasi of Momasi Fire Arts, and Jeff Fader of Fader Knives. How are we all?
You got Wolfman Jack voice going, hey, baby, your peach is fuzzy. Ow!
It's like a 3 a.m. radio
Wolfman
presenter.
Wolfman Jack was more like this, baby.
Yeah, there you go. Whatever. That's fine. Craig, how are you? Are you okay? Are you... Last week you weren't here because everyone seems to think that you're like buried in burning tires and pig feces.
Burning shit everywhere. That's what's happening. The protests are still going on here. It's great because we live in the middle of, literally in the middle of nowhere. So it's surrounded by agricultural land. So everybody around here are farmers. So they're all up with their, you know, with their pitchforks and they're all out with their hose. hose and pig shit. There's a title for us. It is a bit crazy. And just saying then off air, there's been this, and you know, over the last few years there's been so many different things where everything just seems a little bit apocalyptical. You know, it's I had to go shopping the other day, and it's like it's nearly an hour to the big shopping centre. So I get there, it took me two and a half hours, completely empty car park. There's only three people in the whole store, and the store is mad. Everything just seems weird. There's roundabouts where they're just burning shit on them and burning tyres, and it's just absolutely mental.
Why wouldn't there be people in the stores? Are they out of solidarity for the protests?
Out of solidarity. I think it's a bit of both solidarity and knowing that everything is taking an age to get to because they're stopping the traffic and they're sort of filtering down the traffic, so they're letting, you know, one car through a minute, that kind of thing, just to disrupt as much as possible. And what's crazy, like, every French person I've spoken to, they're all solidarity, they're all completely behind and they're completely supporting. Every Brit that I speak to over here, he's just like, these fucking idiots. it's frustrating. But yeah, it's got me thinking. I was driving back the other day and I'm thinking, I see these burning tires on the side of the road. And I'm just thinking, but the last 4 or 5 years have been so mental. And yeah, it's almost like an out-of-body experience, just looking at it going, Jesus Christ, I didn't imagine any of this happening, you know?
I mean, you know, the French perspective, you have, you know, hundreds and hundreds of years of violent protest in their blood, in their DNA.
You're
a minute away from the guillotine showing up.
Yeah. You know? Oh yeah, yeah. They love it. Any excuse to have some sort of riot or some sort of strike or just cause mayhem. They're all over it. So,
One of our listeners sent us a whole thing of the different things that's happening, and there was one video where this, I guess, a tractor with a front loader was just loading a complete bucket full of shit and pushing it onto the front of a bank.
Yeah.
No one's going to get arrested, huh?
What's crazy is that, so the roundabouts, I mean, I know you guys don't really know what a roundabout is.
Yeah, I know what a roundabout is.
Yeah. But the huge roundabouts everywhere in France, and they set fire to them, huge bonfires. And then they have, like, on the side of it, they have these huge, like, marquee, these huge tents, and they put a bar in there, and all the farmers, they're drinking all day, and they're blocking all the roads, and the police are just standing there with them. Right. You know, I know everybody's got a right to a peaceful protest, but when they're stopping cars and they're burning tires, that's not a peaceful protest, you know? It just makes me angry, really angry.
And the protest is because... just to sum everything up?
Just because farming subsidies, basically, farmers are not getting the government subsidies and the help that they've always had. And, you know, things like supermarkets are inching extra money from them and all the rest of it, which I agree with. You know, it's terrible. We should be paying, you know, good prices for, you know, farming products. But the way they're disrupting the public, so the public get on side, that's a very French thing. Mm. I think anywhere else in the world, the public would be like, fuck off, you know? But the French, they sort of double down. They're like, yeah, we're with you. And they'll go and stand by the roundabouts and drink on the side of the road too.
Mareko, do you think in the United States that people stand with violent protest? I don't think
that
they
do. That people
do
what?
I don't think the people in the United States stand with violent protest. I think they're generally like, they're not really, there are
You remember
protests.
June 6th, right?
Well, I don't think that was a protest, my brother.
I think that's what they're trying to do.
They didn't really handle that very well either. I mean, you know, actually, yeah, there was some feces involved, human feces in the Capitol. Yeah, you're right. I forgot about that. There you go.
I saw too at the Louvre. It looked like at the Mona Lisa, there were climate protesters throwing soup on the Mona Lisa.
Yeah.
They should have been throwing soup on the fucking burning tires to put the fucking fires out.
People didn't realize they put glass in front of that. I mean, it just makes it very appalling because you think that this, you know, priceless piece of antiquity is destroyed, but, you know, the Louvre, they know that this shit's going to happen, so they throw that glass in front of it. You know, ain't no soup. I mean, you just giving a soup wash. You ain't giving no, like a soup car wash.
Yeah. I just don't understand. I mean, I'm all for protest and the right conditions, but, you know, this isn't the right way in my mind anyway. But,
Protest isn't really meant to be convenient. I think I remember hearing.
Yeah, true. Yeah, true.
You know, it's supposed to be inconvenient. The problem is they're making it inconvenient for the wrong people. You know,
For you.
And
because we live in such an agricultural area, there's not much going around here. So the farmers are loving it. Like, all the roundabouts are on fire. I think if you live in a city where there's less farmers around, I think, you know, you're not disrupted too much. But for us here, we're like, Jesus Christ, give it a break.
Yeah. All right. Well, there you go. Well, you're back. We all sound a little bit fucked up. Everyone's got something going on.
A little bit
under the weather.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's that tail end of the winter stuff going on, you know?
Right.
Sure.
Mm. Yeah. So what's been going on? What have I been missing?
Mareko, what's going on?
For me, I'm still working on that large integral slicer. It's like an 11 and a half inch slicer. I'm hoping to have that done in the next, next Wednesday, because Thursday, which I need to talk to you guys about, I'm going to actually be on the road traveling.
Where are you off? Where are you going?
I'm going down to South Carolina, where I'm going to be doing a demonstration at, Winter Strong, which is a outdoor event put on by Sornex Outdoors. And it should be fun. I'll be there with Jason Knight. Cool. We're going to be forging up a frenzy.
What do you think, Josh? Do we sign the holiday off?
Do we
sign the holiday off? Do we let him go? What do you think?
Yeah, let him go. We'll take care of him. This is a fucking round.
Holiday approved.
Yeah. As long as it comes out on Monday, you know, who knows? We never know who's going to be here. All right. Well, there you go.
And then other than that, I'm still kind of like getting things ready for, my Damascus forge, or sorry. My demo down at Travis Wirtz Hammering in Casa Grande, where people can still get tickets, I believe, for that over at TravisWirtz.com. Somewhere. It's on Travis Wirtz Instagram. So it's either Wirtz Machine Works or whatever.com, and you can find it on Instagram. And I'll be doing some demoing there and then teaching a class at the Desert Metal Craft School immediately after. It's a Monday, Tuesday. So if anybody's traveling for the Hammerin, piggybacking that with the class would be the way to go. And I'm going to be teaching the principles of how material is moving and how that movement affects patterns. So then we can use that understanding to understand how to predict patterns and reverse engineer patterns and plan and design patterns. So it's a really good class. And then I also just want to give a couple quick, or at least one quick shout out. Neil Kamimura, knife maker, Hawaiian knife maker extraordinaire, our friend. He was just recently featured on a show called On the Roam, which is hosted by Jason Momoa, and he's traveling around and meeting up with these crafters and makers and fabricators that he's a big fan of. And I think it was like the third or fourth episode that Neil was featured in with a couple other makers. Cool. But really, the episode was really featured around him. But you can go find that over on HBO. At least in the States, you can find that on HBO Max. Outside of the States, I'm not quite sure. But yeah, it's a good episode for sure.
Nice.
People should try and catch cool. it.
Look at that. Look, TV suggestions right out of the chute. Look at that. You will never get him back on. He's going to be too big.
Exactly.
Well, I think it's great what he's doing, though. I mean,
yeah, of course. You didn't even say no. You said, it's great what he's doing. You're never going to see him again. That's fine.
I think it's great because it helps bring more awareness to our craft, honestly. Because while there's so many people that know what we're doing as knife makers and hand makers of highly beautiful and handmade knives, there's still so many more people that don't know that. And I think right now the numbers for subscriptions at HBO Max is like something like 94 million or something like that. So that's a lot of visibility. Wow. That's pretty rad. So good for him. I'm psyched.
Yeah, definitely. Wow. Yeah. Amazing.
Unbelievable.
Jeff, what's happening?
What's been happening? We had our Christmas party, Fader Knives Christmas party last weekend, in January, the end of January. We went down to Chinatown, and David and Allison and Tony came down, and we had a great time at Nam Hoa, had some dim sum, had a couple laughs, did a little walking. It was very nice, very, very nice little group sesh, and we had a good time.
Nice. That's great.
And I had too much salt. I definitely, the next day.
You bust out a goiter?
No, I didn't. I didn't bust out a goiter. Is that what you call it?
Bust a goiter.
In the middle of the night when you're.
Did you try one of those sweets?
You can't sleep well. You just go downstairs to bust out a goiter. No. I didn't drink enough water. I didn't drink. I had no booze, but the dim sum sometimes is a lot very salty. So
it's the pussy sweets, I bet.
Oh, we got to talk about that coming up too. You and your friend. We might have to do some ad reads for them, but we'll figure that out later. So and then we've just been pumping out stuff to on the website. We're just finishing up some Dave and I just finished up some forks and some offset serrated. The website is very well rounded right now, and we're really happy about it. And speaking of well rounded, last week and no disrespect to our listeners, but I mean some of you are gonna take a fucking beating right now. I had a customer who wanted to get a t-shirt, and when I buy t-shirts, I buy them outright. I don't do any bullshit. I don't do any layaway. I buy them like, I buy a good amount and then based on what we normally get. So, in the past I've only gotten certain sizes just because the other ones don't work. And every so often someone will, I never really wanted to, and then pick your size. So we had a customer who said they really wanted to, they bought a couple knives and wanted a specific size. And I thought, I'm going to go buy some extra sizes, extra different sizes. And then, hey, maybe some of our listeners or some of my followers would like the opportunity, because sometimes they bust my balls. I'd get a shirt, but you don't have a, and you fill in the size. So I did a whole thing, and then all of a sudden, it's like all these guys, I said, pick the size you want, and then I'll get it. I said, but don't play. Do you want to, let me know, and I'll just. I got 25 guys want extra, it's double XL. I got 20 guys who want triple XL. I got a couple guys 4XL, 5XL. I took care of it, plus some. I bought more shirts than I've ever bought before, and I got them. I thought, okay, no problem. And then all of a sudden I got up. I get, all right, guys, t-shirts are ready. Fucking crickets. Fucking crickets. Fucking crickets. And here's the most annoying part. There's two circles of people. One circle of people who said, oh, yeah, I want to support you. And then another group of people who also, they're the same ones that when they go on my website, when I post something like a tip or something like that, they'll DM me and they'll say, I'm going to steal that, LOL. Hmm. And there's this overlap of the people who want certain sizes. And the bottom line is, I screen capped all the people who wanted the certain sizes, and I know who you are. And all I have to say is there is a degree of demerits, personal demerits I'm giving you as a human being for asking me to get this shirt for you and then just like clamming up. So you know who you are, and I know who you are. So it was like, it was annoying because I just didn't want to buy unnecessarily. And then, you know, I got like 35 people who were like gone with the wind.
Can I ask you a question?
Please.
Is there a reason why you didn't do kind of like a pre-sale? Like,
because I, you know why? Because I just assumed I wasn't going to be buying that much. And they're not going to go bad. It's not like I bought like, you know, 10 shirts with 3 armholes. I mean, I'm not too worried about it.
Specific, yeah.
I'm not too worried about it. I just thought I would do people a solid. And right. I don't like doing pre-sale. The whole point is now I'm trying to get away from doing pre-sales because I'm in business here. So it's like, I want to try to get away from pre-sales as I can. And it's also so much goddamn extra work. Merch sucks. I hate it. I told you this. I've told you this a million times. Hats are good because there's one size. But like when it gets down to like shirts, and it took me all weekend to just bag them all up. You know, I got 100 shirts. And it's like, it was just annoying, and it was fine. So I just figured I'd just break the balls of a lot of people listening to this podcast. So I figured I'd just bitch a little bit. So, but then I'm honestly over it. It's fine. It'll be okay. Fine. It's just annoying.
You sound over it.
I mean, when I bring it back up again, I'm just all of a sudden I'm the rolling boil. I was the fucking calm as a cucumber before. Now I'm like a rolling boil. But it makes me not want to buy merch. You know, it's just like, all right, well, I'm not going to fucking fall for that banana tailpipe again. I did get to go with my high school friend to see the Knicks, and it was amazing. I love Madison Square Garden. As they say, the vibes were immaculate, and the Knicks are fucking number 3 in the Eastern Conference, number 7 in the NBA all day, and it is so much fun being a New York Knicks fan right now.
The vibes are immaculate? Is that what the young people are saying these days?
There's a website called, there's a Instagram, like a Knicks fan. It's called Big Nick Energy. They're great. Gosh. I love those guys. I love Big Nick Energy. I love those fucking guys. And they have like shirts that, you know, everyone,
that's funny.
You know, Barstool sells shirts and John Boy sells shirts. All these sports guys, they like, the merch is their thing. So Big Nick Energy I love Big Nick Energy. And and they have this, one of their things is the vibes are immaculate. And so every so often I bust that out.
Yeah. I got you. I got one more thing from last week that I wanted to shout out for Craig. I saw that Noel Gallagher did a review on your guys' song, Don't Piss on My Party.
He did on two of the songs, pretty cool. Actually.
Oh, okay.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
Were those real?
Yes, they were real, yes. So it went live last night, and I didn't know what the review was going to say until it went live and we heard them. And he's sort of known for being quite
harsh,
putting other people down and harsh and direct. So I was sort of shitting myself. But I think it's good. I think the reviews are pretty good. It's quite constructive what he said. He didn't listen to the whole song, so I'm a little bit gutty because then he would have seen how, you know, things panned out. But no, there was nothing negative. It was all positive.
What did he say?
He liked that. He kept saying, "Whoever this kid is," as if I was some young kid, which I was quite pleased with. and yeah, just saying, you know, the voice was there, and he said about the song could have done with getting to the chorus quicker. But yeah, I sort of agree. Yeah, and all good.
That's definitely not the worst. Yeah.
No, it was all good.
It's not like they say.
Yeah, he could have said it was fucking shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. No, yeah. Which he did with a lot of the songs he did on those reviews. So we got away very lightly with it. And yeah, I was really pleased with it.
Wow, that's pretty fucking cool, dude.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now you're ready for your, you know, your, I mean, dreams do come true.
Well, yeah, we're getting there. We're getting there. Yeah. We're sorting out to, because we're all married men with kids, mm-hmm. Right. So like if we wanted, and we live in 3 different countries, pretty much like us three, we live in 3 different countries.
Oh wow.
But the band members do too, so we're trying to sort of put a sort of tour together, but it needs to be just on Saturday nights. I mean, this is a very specific tour, so it's not really a tour. It basically involves me flying in on Saturday morning, doing a gig on a Saturday night, then flying back home, then the next Saturday doing the same thing for a few weeks, you know. But yeah, it's all good fun. So we're playing all over the UK, basically Manchester, London, Cardiff, and yeah, it's all good.
Wow, that's
congratulations.
Cool.
Thank you.
That's I mean, that is something pretty major. Three fives.
Yeah.
It is a big thing from nothing 2 years ago to
being reviewed by Noel Gallagher.
Yes, exactly. And you know, for me, he's my songwriting hero, you know. So yeah, he's all good.
When do you know when you guys are going to be doing that tour? Is it through the summer?
I've got the dates here. So we start in March, end of March.
Okay.
And we do basically 8 weeks every Saturday for 8 weeks.
Okay.
And then we've got a couple of big festivals then, because it's all middle of the summertime. Yeah, it's all good.
Cool.
The vibes are immaculate.
I'm going to be using that today. Yeah.
I dare you. That your next song could be called. They'll never know. You don't know about the Big Nick Energy over there in France and Wales.
No, the vibes are immaculate.
Hey, there you go.
Can that be a title for this?
Please.
Okay, please. Let me make a note.
The vibes are immaculate.
The vibes are. Okay, nice. Okay.
There you go.
Shall we get on with things?
Why not?
Okay. Well, let's talk about one of our sponsors, first of all.
Knife Talk is sponsored by Even Heat, the manufacturers of the finest heat treat ovens available. To find your next oven, go to evenheat-kiln.com.
Doing now. Okay, questions. We've got questions from you guys. We are Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram. DM us your questions and hopefully we'll get around to answering them. This first one is from Duck Rabbit Forging. He said, okay, so I'm in high school, right? I'll say this like a teenager. Okay, so I'm in high school, right? Do I get a job so I can afford more tools, or do I just make knives? Afford less tools, but hopefully be better at knife making. Okay, so he's at the age of finishing school, and he's wondering whether he should just get straight into making knives for a living, or whether he should get a job and, you know, buy the tools and do it slowly. What are we thinking?
What do you think, Mareko?
I think get a regular job and save up, because it's hard to progress and continue to grow as a maker if you're limited by your tooling. And so if you can get a job and get that equipment and not have to be struggling to make knives so that you can then buy more materials sell them and then buy more materials and tools. If you can you can probably work the job, go to school, and still make knives at the same time, a little bit here and there with what limited tooling you have, or what limited tooling you start to accumulate. And honestly, I don't think there's anything wrong with getting a fucking normal job and getting a feel for that and having that experience to appreciate the knife making maybe a little bit more.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think what you just said about waiting until you can afford more tools, because having the right tools would make you far more efficient then as well. Yeah, I think it's one of those things where I don't think anybody really got into knife making just one day from a cold start said, right, this is now my career. You know,
Steele did, I think.
Maybe. Well, he always knew he was going to do that, maybe, right. I think. You know, he was, you know, he's priming himself for that throughout. But yeah, it's going from a cold start would be very, very difficult. So I think, as Mareko said, get yourself a job. Do a bit on the side, and as you're earning and also gaining more experience making knives as well, there'll eventually come a point where maybe you're making an income from those knives, and that can take over the income that you're making from a job. Well, maybe then's the time to, you know, think about it.
This is a very smart young man, and I actually messaged him because I just felt like he didn't want to have to wait till Monday. And if I could look back in regards to my experience, I would have done, if I knew I was going down this road, I would have gotten a job where the idea would be you're working for a job where you use your hands a lot, like as a fabricator or as a mechanic or as a carpenter.
He's a high school teenage boy. He's using his hands a lot, believe me.
The vibes are immaculate. He's giving me. Oh, he's pumped. What did he say, Craig? Oh, Mareko, he's grabbing his gullet. Pinching
Busting
out
a goiter.
Pinching a goiter. Pinching a goiter.
Busting a goiter.
The best thing you can do is to get comfortable using the kind of tools that you're using when you're a knife maker, getting a job as a fabricator, getting a job as a mechanic. I even suggested to him, like, when I was in college and I really wanted to be an artist, my dad said, get a job as an artist assistant or as an intern and just call him up and say he'll sweep the floors. Mm. That's the move. You got to do something in the vein of where you want to go. And that would be not only a job where maybe you make some money, but also you get comfortable in terms of discipline and deadlines. When you're in a metal shop, you're not just fumfering around making a railing. You have a very specific, you know, they figure out how much it's going to cost to make the railing, how much time it's going to take, and their expectations of mm-hmm. how you can execute in a very timely manner. You're going to learn foundational shit that's going to help you later in life. I was just talking to Coy Baker at Baker Forge, and he started out as a blacksmith, but his business experience comes from running his family's paint shop, painting mm-hmm. company. And he could not have created this business without having the business background from the painting company. So it's important to kind of, if you have the opportunity to think about, this is what I want to do, have something that's similar where you're going to get foundational knowledge and information. It doesn't have to be working at a knife making guy. Anything that's going to give you that you can transfer those skills over with. That's what I would do. Yep. And then I also told him to call Steve Pellegrino to tell him to sweep his floors. He's in Philly. So.
Oh, I got you. Fair enough.
You know, so Steve, he's going to come. Duck River, I'm already going to, you know what, Steve, Duck Rabbit Forging is going to be on his way. He'll be over at around 9:30. I gave him your address. He's going to be over at your shop around 9:30. Just, you know, take care of him, okay? So.
Nice.
Next. Right.
Go ahead. You want it?
Go ahead.
All right, this next one's from K&M Knives. What are your thoughts when someone asks you to make a knife for a fundraiser? Do you give it free of charge? Do you charge enough to get back what you have in materials? I've been asked by a high school AG class and by a conservation club. You guys are awesome, but Craig rocks. I mean, who else do you know gets salty vagina candy at a rock show? God damn it.
I think that's maybe why my throat is playing up, though, to be honest.
Too much of the old vagina candy.
Okay, thoughts on making a knife at a fundraiser. I mean, he's mentioned that he's been approached by two. Personally, I mean, I think if you've got an investment, I suppose. I don't mean sort of financial investment, but if you're invested in this charity and the work that they do, because anybody can come to you and say, "Oh, it's for a good cause,"
right.
And you know, generally will be, you know. But I think you could be doing that all day for the rest of your life if that's the case. Sure. So I think if it's something that you're personally invested with, I think then if you want to help out, I think if you're doing it, you do it. You don't then say, "Oh, I'll charge you for the steel or whatever." And if you're doing it, you're doing it. But I think just maybe choose wisely. Don't just do it because you've been asked to. Do it because you know your heart and soul's in it, and you really want to try and make a difference. I think that would be the main thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think a lot of, especially the fundraisers I've been connected with and nonprofits I've been connected with. If you look around, like at some of the other sponsors, I think the idea is that they're giving, but at the same time, especially with like the local college university here, they do a scholarship fundraising gala, and it's got a lead sponsor, it's got these secondary sponsors, it's got all these people donating stuff, and the idea is that they're giving but also getting a little bit of publicity at the same time. And if these people aren't necessarily your target market, then yeah, I think like Craig said, if you're more invested in it because of what they got going on, or you're just connected in it to that community or those organizations in some intimate way, then it makes sense maybe to try to do something like that. And then I think when it comes to do you just donate it flat outright, or is there kind of a contract agreement? If you do anything like I can't afford the cost of the materials. So I need to be compensated at least for the materials. I think that's actually completely fair. And honestly, a lot of auction or raffle or donate, maybe not raffle, I don't think, but I think auction items usually sometimes work that way, where a certain part of it has to come back because of the, if there's an extreme loss. But if it's just like, you know, $50 in materials and kind of like whatever. But I think that ultimately is up to you and what you can manage and afford. And again, if you're going to be donating, like I donated to this scholarship fundraiser because there was a lot of the higher kind of like the higher earning people in my local community who might potentially become customers. The host of the gala was a celebrity chef, so it was an opportunity to connect with them in a way doing that. And so that's why I had done that a few times, but I haven't done those in a while. But there was an opportunity there to give as well as simultaneously kind of benefit from the interaction and the engagement. It doesn't have to all be one-sided. I think I think part of the idea is that there is kind of a give and take in the donating relationship sometimes, you know?
Yeah. I say give them an invoice. I'm donating this knife to childhood cancer. Here's my invoice.
I mean, I think another thing that's difficult, especially if it's being auctioned off, is like at the price point of my knives, which is a few $1,000s, if I'm not there to represent and be part of the thing, then it's hard to really sell it. And who knows how much it's going to go for. And ultimately, like that money's going to the school. But also for me personally, I'm like, oh, I feel bad. I feel sad if the knife only sells for a couple $100s or something, right? So there's that aspect to think about too, I think, when you're deciding if you're going to try to donate something. You got to figure out, which I'm still learning how to do, to just like let go of it, and what happens to it happens to it. But at this point, I'm actually better off making a knife, either auctioning it personally on my page and then donating that money, or selling the knife and then donating like what, a few $100s to a nonprofit or a fundraiser of some sort, rather than donating the piece. Because sometimes
I think particularly for you, because you know, it's, you know, sort of the high end work that you do, mm-hmm. your followers are into that high end stuff,
right.
Where people who go to a general sort of charity auction, you know, they're not necessarily, you know, knife collectors or, you know, sure. into, you know, specific pieces. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
For years I was involved, personally, my opinion is if you're going to give it, give it. If you're going to donate, donate. I don't get involved with like, I need to, you know, $50 in money back. I don't get involved with that. I just, if you're going to, you know, have a certain amount that you're willing to donate per year, and then make it that, and that's the end of it. And that's what I would say. I got involved, and I'm probably even mentioned this before. I got involved with this old high school friend who's the president of this organization. And every year they have this fundraiser down in Lower Manhattan, and it's this big to do, and it's a big auction, and there's all sorts of stuff, and there's, you know, local New York celebrities there, and opportunities to get like, you know, tickets to see live Jimmy Fallon, and, you know, being able to do some things. And, you know, and then they always ask me to put a knife in, and I just do it. And then they invite me to the big gala and we eat some food. And it's just, honestly, I hate doing it only because the people are just the worst. I mean, these people are the worst. And it's like, it's just like, it's such a bore. And all I can think of is how long is it take me to get home, and all this stuff. And I'll never forget the first year, the guy who had got me in, his brother-in-law got one of the knives. And then the second year, another family member got one of the knives. And then all of a sudden, I'm just like, and they were basically getting them probably a little bit more than I was selling them for. And then all of a sudden, I started to realize, and one guy said to me before, he's like, hey, do you think you could put in a different colored handle this year? And all of a sudden, I realized it was the same goddamn guy. And basically what he was doing was he was winning the auctions, and it was all a write-off. So basically, he was trying to put together a custom set of my knives over the years. And he was basically doing the fucking commercial, you know, like telling me what he wanted. And then he was going to just outbid everybody. And then it was a tax write-off. And I was just like, I'm done with this. I'm done with this. I'm done with this. So that's funny. People are
weird. Yeah.
So, there you go. Next one is from Black Rock Forge. G'day, fellas. I need your help / experience. Sitting here hand sanding. And every once in a while, these cloudy-looking, hamon-looking uglinesses show up, and no matter what I do, it doesn't go away. Is there any way to prevent this? Peace and love, Adam Doherty. Now, I asked a couple more questions, and I will... You guys talk about it so far, and then I'll add on to it.
Right. I mean... I did look at his page, and it looks like he does a lot of mono steel knives. And I think maybe one potential is this, just that the blade isn't actually fully hardening for whatever reason. Maybe the oil's too cold, or the cross-section of the knife's too thick, or he's not agitating it properly. There's so many different things that could play into it. But that is, in the past, that has definitely happened to me. I'm going along, and I'm working on a knife. And unfortunately, I'm catching it usually in the finish grinding when it's too late to try to get it back into the kiln to reheat treat it. And then I just got to suck it up. And either, and most, when those happen, they just go into a pile of, in a drawer, and kind of forgotten about with my sadness that comes along with it. So, but there's, yeah, if you can catch it before it's too late and you can reheat treat it, then I would try to reheat treat it. Otherwise, I mean, it sounds like he's seeing this in the finish grinding. And so, God, yeah, I don't know what you do, but just kind of go through your heat treating process and see what you are doing to get the steel cool. Because again, I think my biggest thing when it happens to me is, especially with an integral knife, is that it's such a large thermal mass. When I'm quenching the blade, depending on the materials that the steels that the Damascus is made from, and the oil, and how hot is the oil, and how am I doing a good job agitating it? Those all play into whether or not I'm going to get a properly fully hardened blade. And sometimes I have had to start, for a while I was forging my blades and I was heat treating the bolster as forged, so I wasn't really doing any grinding, but the thermal mass of it was too much. And so I had to start doing some preliminary grinding just to bring that thermal mass down, so it's not holding as much heat in the quench, so that I can get a full heat treating and transformation in the integral bolster portion of the knife, and avoid basically these unhardened areas of the knife.
Some people call them auto hormones, but it's not auto hormones. What it is you've brought your steel up to the critical temperature, and then you've created austenite, and then you're quenching it to turn it into martensite, and some of the austenite is not converting into martensite.
Yeah, it turns into a perlite or a mixture of perlite and ferrite. And yeah, anyways.
Could it also
you're just
be
not getting a full transformation.
Could it also be decarb?
Potentially it could be decarb, actually, yeah. If he's heat treating close to what his finished dimension in, there's potential that he's just not getting through all the decarb. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, I used to have that experience, and then I changed my heat treating. I got Dr. Laren Thomas's book, and I just kind of like went back to basics, and it really did make a huge help in terms of like killing the doubt of, you know, making sure that there's no retained austenite and don't have any blotches or blobs or something like that. Yeah. That happens a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. Laren's book is a good reference for sure. It's a good quick reference, but his website, his knifesteelnerds.com, his blog, is even better for going way deeper in all the various subjects and stuff like that that he covers in the knife steel or with a knife engineering book.
What do you think, Craig?
I pretty much agree. Okay. Yes.
There you go.
Yes. Yeah. But what I will tell everybody is, I mean, he measures his hand sanding. I hope he's using Indasa Rhino Wet. It's what we all use. It's the sandpaper that saves you time, therefore saving you money. And if you go to texasferrosupply.com, where they stock Indasa Rhino Wet, they also stock a multitude of other things, whether you're a knife maker, a blacksmith, or whatever you want to call yourself, they've got everything for you there. TexasFireSupply.com, all the materials you could possibly need, including Indasa Rhino Wet. Use Knife Talk 10 and get 10% off the order.
Mm-hmm. Why don't you take the next question, Craig?
From Justin Miller. As stupid as this may sound, I have someone that is trying to copy or take my name. I've been Florida Man Forge since 2019 when I started blacksmithing. The kicker is that the dude is even in my town. Do I give a shit or do I just ignore it? Thanks, boys. Just Insider.
Good old Justin.
Just Insider, yeah. So somebody's taken his name, but they're actually in the same town. I mean...
That's fucking weird.
Well,
the guy has to know what he's doing.
Surely.
But is it possible that Florida Man has become this expression to describe people from Florida, like crazy? Usually, you know, like when we on Full Blast, I have all this strange news, and a lot of it is like wackos from Florida. And there's this concept of Florida Man. This is Florida Man. And
right, okay.
So it's like, is it possible that the expression is very widespread and maybe, you know, it's wide enough spread that like people maybe think that they're being creative. Now, in this situation, let's just assume that the guy knows. You got two choices. Confrontation or change your shit, you know.
But why does he have to change it?
I said there's two options. I didn't say that.
I think there's three options.
What are the three options?
The third is, I mean, you contact it. It doesn't need to be confrontational in any way. And just say, look, this could be a problem for both of us, actually, you know? You're not just flaming straight in saying, hey, I've had this name for years. You know, you need to change your name. It's just a case of, hey, I've just noticed you come along. It's great. You know, more people in the area doing this. But the fact that you've got the same, you know, your name is very similar to mine could cause a problem for both of us. Maybe we could reconsider a bit, you know?
What do you think, Mareko?
Going gently to begin with.
That's what she said. Go ahead, Mareko. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I'm actually looking at Justin Miller's page, and it looks like he's tried connecting with the guy, and the guy is ignoring him. He's not getting back to him.
Oh, right, okay.
So I think the guy fucking knows what he's doing. And the only other Florida Man Forge I can find on Instagram is like some dude doing some kind of janky, boring blacksmith shit. And he's
with
only
his
got
hand?
Like,
is he doing it straight with bare hand?
No, but he's only got like 11 posts. So it's not, I don't think he's necessarily a threat, but it is confusing. And yeah, trying to figure out how to, yeah, I don't know. I'm terrible with confrontation, honestly. I really fucking suck at it. And so part of me would just be like, fuck this guy and blast him on my Instagram.
Yeah, that's confrontation.
But yeah, it does seem like Justin's trying to figure it out. He's just like, but he can't get a hold of the dude. I think you just show up at his thing.
Oh yeah. Really make
with a big sign that says, I'm the real Florida Man Forge.
This is the most Florida Man our confrontations have become. Just show up at a shop with a big sign and fuck you. That is 100% the motto of the Florida Man is fuck you. You know, let's take some drugs and fuck you. I'd be honest with you, I hate confrontation too. And like I said in the beginning, you can do a couple things. You can confront them or you can just say, I can come up with a better name than this. It's like, you know, what's your best options? You know, I mean,
I'm just Googling now Florida Man Forge and it all seems to be Justin Miller.
So maybe this is something, maybe I wouldn't worry about it. Maybe just ride the wave. You know, I don't know. I don't like, you know, no, I mean, I'm with these guys. I don't like fucking confrontation either. You know, I don't even like it when people, you know, steal my ideas. So it's like, if they stole my name, I'd fucking lose my fucking mind. You're going to talk about popping a goiter. I mean, you can't make it up. We'll pop a goiter up in this bitch.
Yeah. Those are the options, I suppose. Yeah.
You need a you know what? Ultimately, Justin, you're talking to one guy from the Pacific Northwest. You're talking to another guy from New York and another guy from Wales. You need a Florida man to give you real advice on this situation. We are far from Florida men. Get yourself
I know somebody called Florida Man, actually. He's got Ian's a forge.
You know what?
Give him a call.
Call Steve Schwarzer. See what he says. He's a Florida man. He'll tell you what to do. And you get Steve Schwarzer to call him up and say, hey, there's only one Florida man forge. That's Justin Miller. Maybe listen, maybe both Florida Man Forges are listening to this podcast. Guys, as far as knife talk is concerned, Justin Miller is the only Florida Man Forge.
Settled.
There we go.
Done. Justin Miller. You play that motherfucker to the other guy, and you're in good business.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop.
Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Florida Man Forge is Justin Miller, period. Judge Wapner. Perfect. It's too old a reference for most of you guys. All right.
Is that like Judge Judy?
Judge Wapner. There used to be a show called People's Court.
Oh, yeah.
And there was on TV show, and this old guy named Judge Wapner, and he would do these ridiculous civil court things in front of the thing. And probably the most famous he was is there was a Dustin Hoffman and Tom Cruise movie called Rain Man. And Dustin Hoffman played a mentally challenged person who would say, I got at 4 o'clock, I got to watch Wapner. And it was like, got to watch Wapner. So, it was, got to watch Wapner.
Gotcha.
There you go.
Okay. Who's taking the next?
I'll take it. This next one is from Rancher Blades. Hey, cuties, I have a question or topic I'd love some insight on. What is the best way to prevent wood from shrinking? I use some snake wood that I assumed was naturally stable hardwood, but after about a month with the customer, it developed a crack down the spine of the handle, and I can feel the pin protruding about a tenth of an inch on either side. I assumed this hard wood didn't need stabilization since it is naturally super oily. Any possibility altitude has an effect on it? It was glued up at 300 feet elevation, and the customer lives at 7,000 foot elevation.
So, boys, snake wood's shrinking.
Yeah.
What you're saying.
Yeah.
What are you giggling about, Craig?
So this is an oily wood, which he assumed wouldn't need stabilizing because it's hard. Which is, yeah, generally if they're oily, it can be quite difficult to stabilize anyway. They don't generally take up much sort of stabilizing fluid. Maybe it's an age thing. I think even if it's a hardwood and it's sort of freshly cut, there's still some room for sort of shrinkage there. So maybe it's just a case of you didn't have it hanging around enough. I don't know. And the elevation, would that make a huge difference? I don't know.
Probably. I mean, it's...
Yeah.
Elevation is probably going to have similar... I don't know. I mean, I'm assuming. I have no idea. I would imagine it makes a difference, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Recco,
I don't know.
What do you think?
I don't know.
I mean, I assume that kind of atmospheric humidity would make a bigger difference rather than altitude. Or maybe there's, you know, with altitude, things get drier. Anyways... But I would think it has more to do with that. But unfortunately, even with stabilized handle material, potential shrinkage or expansion is actually that is a potential issue always with any kind of natural materials. And honestly, I think that's why a lot of makers are doing more of these museum fit ups, because it kind of takes that into account. And instead of it being super flush with a guard or a bolster or something like that, or even the spine of the tang of the handle.
Can you explain a museum fit up and what difference would be?
Yeah, I'm getting there. Actually,
okay,
sorry.
Craig, he's getting there. You're come on, don't worry about it.
So instead
you think
of everything
he's not going to tell you about it.
So instead of everything being flush, the museum fit up, the handle scales, whether they're handle scales or it's a hidden tang, the handle material is slightly oversized from the hardware around it. Again, whether it's the guards or the spine of the tang or whatever. And so, but that helps to alleviate this concern of fluctuation in slight expansion or contraction, because it already is kind of built into the piece in a way. But you don't necessarily want to do that on every piece. But I would say maybe if you know that somebody's going to be in a completely different kind of environment, like air quality or humidity wise, that might be something as consideration to take in to account for when you are building the piece, because it's going to experience that. And then, like I said, even, I mean, honestly, even if you, it's somebody, and if it's Florida Man building a knife for fucking Florida Man number two, it also, it comes down to whatever kind of exposure to excess moisture that the handle might be experiencing, or excess dryness from how something's being stored. Any kind of material, whether it's natural, unstabilized, or if it's being stabilized, will still experience a certain amount of fluctuation in its size from when you finish it to a year, two, three, whatever down the road that knife is being used. And it's just something that happens, and you take it back and you shape it up and clean it back up, or like in this case, the scales have shrunk down, so they're smaller and everything. So maybe you can re-sculpt everything and get back in and tighten it up so everything matches again. But then the potential is, okay, it shrunk down and then it swells back up while it's with you. I don't know. It's just like natural materials, there's always a back and forth. And so if you want to avoid any of that shit, work with synthetics like G10, micarta, all kinds of synthetics out there.
Micartas do expand a little bit.
Oh, really? Okay.
A little bit.
All right.
It's hard to do museum fit up with scales.
It is.
Because it's still, that's not going to affect, that's still going to have the same problem with the pins. Mareko's 100% right. My suggestion is use G10. I've made knives with unstabilized walnut, and I've made knives with stabilized walnut, and I've had stabilized walnut that moves a little bit, and then I've had unstabilized walnut that doesn't move a fucking thing. So he's 100% right. It's like, some of this stuff is rolling a dice. And frankly, Mareko, I don't know how you do it. You do your beautiful knives with the thought that there is a chance that something could change. Yeah. In one of the knives you've done over the years.
Yeah. Yeah. And I get them back. Like, I'm actually going to be getting a couple back for spa days this weekend. And I'm sure I think the customer said that the handle scales actually did shrink down, or the handle material shrunk slightly. So that is definitely something I'm going to account for. And that, even if where they live is super different, it's actually the atmosphere within the environment where it's actually at, like in somebody's house. So somebody might be in a super humid place, but they keep their house really dry. That's going to affect the handle material too, right? And so, yeah, it's just something that has to be addressed from time to time.
Dang. Yeah, an awkward one, that, really, isn't it? Yeah. Okay, Falcon Knives AK says, "Hey guys, question about tempering. I understand how to do it and why it's needed, but I don't fully understand the process as a whole. For your common blade steel, why do they recommend two temper cycles instead of just one? If I don't have the time to temper two cycles in one day, does it do any harm to the steel to wait overnight between cycles?" And he says, "Why do you need to hold for 2 hours? Is it just to ensure the steel is at the same temp all the way through? And does cooling the blade faster or slower between cycles change anything?" He said, "I know this is a pretty loaded question, but any help on these subjects would be greatly appreciated. Thank you. Congrats on the big 300.
This must be an old one.
That was some time ago. Yeah.
What do you guys think?
I remember when we had on Dr. Laren Thomas, and I don't remember why he said you do two courses at 200 degrees, 400 degrees for 2 hours a pop. The only thing I remember was he says if cooling it down after you temper it doesn't make a difference if you let it cool by itself or you quench it after it's tempered. He said that doesn't make a difference. The only difference it would make is if you're shim tempering, you're trying to fix a warp, leaving it clamped in the bar that's, you know, overcompensating for the bend, it's better to do it in, let it cool down to room temperature by itself. But what do you think, Mareko? You probably have a better understanding of why it's 2 hours, two times.
Well, I already had my own thoughts, but I did look up on, and I literally just searched knife steel nerds tempering. And one of the first articles that comes up is an article titled "What Happens During Tempering of Steel." And so Laren definitely gets into it, but essentially the short of it is that as a knife is tempered through the first cycle, there's almost always retained austenite. So when we heat the blades up really high above critical, we're transforming the steel into an austenite phase. And then our goal when we quench it is for it to transform into a martensitic phase, or structure. And that gives us our hard, wear resistant, edge holding steel. But there's always some amount of austenite that's retained after that transformation to martensite. And it's retained and it stays there. And so when you go through your first heat or tempering cycle to help pull some of that hardness down, which helps toughen up the knife so it's not brittle like glass, some of that retained austenite kicks over and transforms into untempered martensite. And it's, you don't know where or when it's happening. So you want to go at least through a second cycle to then temper any austenite that's transformed into untempered martensite. And that second round, again, is just reinforcing the temper you did the first time around, as well as tempering the second round or that newly transformed martensite. And then you can go a third time for good measure, but I don't think it's really too necessary for a lot of the knives that we're making. But I will say it is important that it comes down to room temperature between cycles. He's asking if is it bad if I only do one and then come back the next day and do the second one? No, I don't think that's bad. And if you're doing it all in one go, like I have my kiln set up to do the temper cycles overnight, but it has to come all the way down to at least 50 degrees before it goes back up, which is essentially kind of an ambient room temperature. And that takes time. So another question he has in here is like, does it matter how quickly it cools or how slow it cools? That doesn't, like Jeff was just addressing, that doesn't really affect it. But what is important is that it does come down to room temperature before going back into a second heat treat or a tempering cycle. I think part of the reason you want to do it, a 2-hour temper cycle too, which is part of his question, is that sometimes depending on the thickness of the knife, depending on the machine or the kiln that the knife is being tempered in, it can take upwards of half an hour just for the blade to come up to temperature, because it's just sitting in an ambient air environment. Now, if you're heat treating and tempering out of salt baths, that's different because you have a fluid that's physically in contact and like directly transferring heat, where when it's in the ambient air of a kiln, like most of us are using, it just takes longer. And so it can take a while. And so once it finally gets up the temperature, at that point you want it to have a decent amount of time, and those times are based off studies and all these different tests and stuff that Laren's blog and Dr. Laren's blog and book both go into much more detail about, but you just do, basically. Just do it. And I think what I've heard is you want at least an hour at your tempering temperature. So if you want at least an hour, that doesn't mean you set your timer for an hour. That means you set your timer for an hour and a half. So it has time to come up to temperature and then stay there and soak for that hour before coming back down. I like doing 2 hours because why the fuck not? And I got plenty of other shit to do. And so I just do two temper cycles for 2 hours each. And with a coming down to room temperature in between, because that's just all part of it. But yeah, get Dr. Laren Thomas's book, Knife Steel Engineering, which we've already obviously referenced a few times. It is a really good reference for people. And you can get more information, more in-depth information on his blog, knifesteelnerds.com.
Yeah. I've got a related question, actually, which Morocco, I think you should be able to answer for me. When doing the initial heat treat, so not the temper, the actual hardening, what is the difference between putting the knife in a cold oven and letting it heat up and then going from there to heating up the kiln, then putting it in at heat?
I think Ideally, again, it can vary. Mileage varies between machines and even different brand, not only different brands, but even different machines within the same brand based on size and all that. I think the goal is, or for me, I like the kiln to come up the temperature, and then I give it about half an hour to stabilize, because depending on your ramp speed, it can take a while actually for things to kind of level out before it's actually comfortably hovering at whatever your tempering temperature is. And at that point, that's when I put my knife in, because though it takes time for the blade to come up at the temperature, if you're doing like a batch and some of the blades are a little bit closer to the heating coils, whether it's at the tip or on the sides or whatever, and your ramp speed, if your ramp speed's like full bore, then that knife is going to be, there's a high likelihood of that knife being exposed to higher temperatures than you actually want, and over tempering, yeah. Rather than letting the kiln come up to temperature, giving it again about half an hour to let it kind of level out, and then put your work in to let it go through the temper cycles.
So would there be any harm in putting the knife in a cold kiln and just leaving it there for that ramp up though?
I would say, If your ramp up speeds are lower and slower, then I think it should be fine. Like I have mine set to, I think it's 1200 or 1250 an hour, which means I'm getting to my, 375 degree temperature, ideally in about 15 to 20 minutes. So really that's not big of a deal, but I still think, before you start your timer, you still want to give it that time once it's reached temperature to stabilize, and then start clocking after that.
So the danger is that the overheat overheating whilst it stabilizes. I've got you. Yeah. Okay. That makes sense. Yeah. Okay.
At least that would be my concern.
Yeah. Okay. Makes sense. You guys look down those questions, see if there's anything that jumps out that you really want to answer.
We have to get the listener feedback.
Okay, exactly. Let me tell everybody about Dharma Steel, who we've been working with for some time now. They make premium grade stainless Damascus, I suppose. The most beautiful, beautiful stuff. Amazing patterns. We work with them every year on the Chef Invitational, which is their award ceremony. We get to see amazing, amazing pieces that people are making. If you're looking for something special, Dharma Steel is the stuff you need to look at, dharmasteel.se. Don't be put off, because everybody we speak to, they're always surprised how easy it is to work with. So go take a look, dharmasteel.se. And we've got news very soon about next year's build along, which is going to be far bigger and far better than ever before.
And the new promo code is, once again...
is Dharma Steel 10.
No, Knife Talk 10.
No, it's just Knife Talk. Oh, Jesus Christ. It's Knife Talk 10. Sorry. Yes. So, yes, if you get on dharmasteel.se, pick your piece and use Knife Talk 10 at checkout, you'll get 10% off too.
All right, guys.
Also, Dharma Steel AB on Instagram. Go check them out.
Guys, if you want to participate with the show, you've got to follow Knife Talk Podcast Instagram. You can send us your questions, your dilemmas, or your listener feedback. We're going to do listener feedback now. And the first one comes from our friend Kyle Heath, which is an audio clip. Wow. So he said in the last episode, titled Blame the French, you know, something to do with, I don't know how the ads work. Craig, you can explain how the ads, how do the ads work? There are ads that are thrown in every so often. How do the ads
work? They're dynamic. Yeah. So we don't put them in. We literally say put one in the middle, one at the end, and one at the beginning. And the way it works in, it's almost like the way Google throws ads at you when you're Googling stuff. It'll Google stuff that's relevant to you. It'll flip up ads that are relevant to you. So the ads are put in dynamically per listener. So all of our listeners won't have the same ads. They should be specific to you, and we've got no say in the matter with that at all.
So what you're saying is the clip I play is, if it's an ad, it is completely due to what Kyle Heath is listening to or interested in
what
in his life.
What they think he'll be interested in, yes. Yeah,
so
yeah.
He said, he sent me an audio clip, and he says, this might be the funniest ad placement of all time. Let's see how this goes. Let me see if I get this to work.
All right, this next one's from Paul Jansen. He says, when you first got started, did you find your skill level was about
breast milk science? It's a thing, and it's our thing. We are by heart. Our mission is simple.
Is that breath?
Did you hear that?
What was it?
You were asking a question. It says from Paul Jansen. Do you want to play it again?
I heard that it cut me. It like
cut into you.
Right in
I'll
the middle.
Play it one more time. One more time. Okay. Just like the radio. I'm going to lower it a little bit. Wow, shit. One more time. Hold on. Just hold the fuck. This is a real
radio
show.
A lot of dead
show.
Air happening.
Don't worry about this. Well, so fill the dead air. What's the matter with you?
You're doing it.
Jesus
Christ.
This next one. All right, this next one's from Paul Jansen. He says, when you first got started, did you find your skill level was about
breast milk science? It's a thing, and it's our thing. We are by heart. Our mission is simple.
Breast milk science.
Breast milk science. So it's a couple of questions there. So
Paul Jansen was asking
first of all,
about breast milk.
No.
What the hell is breast milk science? And Kyle, what have you been Googling for them to think you're interested
Kyle,
in breast milk
Yeah, Kyle,
science?
This is funny ad placement, but it's very telling on some of the things that you're interested in. The next listener feedback comes from our friend Knives by Nuge. Last episode, we were talking about eye protection, and he says, Knives by Nuge, if you're not following Knives by Nuge, he's making it happen. Love Tom. He's a great guy. I'm not trying to harp on shop safety too hard, but I've had a shop accident that happened that could have easily been prevented with basic eye protection. Earlier today, I stepped on a dog turd. I had the bright idea of blasting it off with compressed air.
I quickly
got a blast of dog shit in my face and a bit in my eye. Wear your protection, folks. You never know when shit will hit the fan.
Oh, jeez.
So. And he says he hasn't gotten pink eye yet, so.
Yes.
That's
nasty,
gross.
Nasty.
That's probably I just don't know why I would think about using compressed air to knock dog shit off my shoe. But, Tom, listen, I salute your, and you know, why not, right? That's experience, right? You'll never do that again. Kurt Comiotti says, I want to thank you and give you credit for the idea of using rubber bands for epoxying hidden tang handles. I made a jig to hold the blades upright and with rubber bands to hold the perfect tension for the epoxy to cure. Now I don't have a vise that loses the tool. Now I don't have to lose my vise and lose that tool while these cure for 24 hours. Thanks for the tips, guys, that you give each episode. So it was directed to me, but I started... With the hidden tang knives, I started using rubber bands to kind of, you know, do the compression between a hidden tang knife. And I swear to God, it was the most convenient way. I would take two pieces of wood, like two popsicle sticks, and I would clamp them to the top of the blade. So making a T, and then I'd have a rubber band going all the way down from one side of the T around the bottom of the wood and to the top. And it was the perfect amount of compression. I'd been doing that for a long time. And then I don't have a million clamps, and I don't have to worry. And I made this little thing that holds them all, and it really was convenient. So you're welcome.
Nice.
This one comes from our friend, the Canton Cutler. Here's a good tip on stone washes. I've been a fan of stone wash blades for a long time. Easy to service, less fussy, much quicker to finish. I finish up at 220 on the machine, then sandblast with 120 grit media and straight into the tumbler. Bob's your uncle. When it's time for service, just tape everything up, sandblast and tumble and get it out the door. Jake, I've got to get a sandblaster.
I think that's the move, especially for somebody like you doing a high number production.
Yeah, sandblaster would be a good move. That's going to be the next thing. I've been the stone wash finish is a really nice finish, and especially on stainless. And that's the thing on stainless; it really is a nice finish. I got to get a sandblaster. Yeah. Tim.
So he's taking just 220. Then back into a rougher media. And right, okay. God, that would speed things up. So yeah.
Do you do stonewash finish, Craig?
I've never ever done one. No, no.
It is really good. You know who does a really good stone finish? Once again, Matt Gentry kind of gave me his how he does a stonewash finish, and what I'm amazed in is how the acid really goes well with the stainless. Like you'd think that it would resist a little bit, but it doesn't at all. Makes it dark. He was saying that stonewash finish on carbon steel knives is much harder than to do with a stainless knife. And I saw the AEBL and the 440C, it does great. 440C takes longer to get darker, but it gets super dark. And then it looks great. Both look great. All right. Tim Kingsford says, talking about people giving you a fright while you're working. We were talking about, you know, you're working and then all of a sudden someone walks in and you jump out of your skin. My wife loves to try to sneak up on me while I'm working and just stand behind me until I turn around and jump out of my skin, making very unmanly noises. She takes videos of it every time, and I've got a bad feeling there's a compilation being made.
Oh, sweet.
Tim Kingsford's wife. How dare you, madam, embarrass your husband like that.
Brilliant. Also, when she posts it, you got to send us a link.
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah. That's unfortunate. Chris Dobbs says, "Have you? You guys should get Craig to do that candy as a sponsor." LMA. So what I thought about was maybe we should practice an ad read. How would an ad read sound for the vagina flavored candy? Craig, you think you can do a quick ad read off the cuff?
I'll get one prepared for next week. I promise
you. Just do one right off the cuff.
I promise. I'll do a Japanese accent. Oh no, and I'll you will not somebody. Do a Japanese accent. I'll offend somebody.
Do a Japanese accent. There will be no Japanese accents on this episode. Next episode of fucking Life Talk, you whack job. Jesus Christ! You think the French are going to come after you? Oh my God! No accents.
Yes. That's what I'm saying. That's what I said. Give me a week and I'll sort something. If I try and do one off the cuff, I'm going to offend
somebody. If you do one today, it's going to be straight to Japanese accent. You're going to get yourself out of there. All right. Well, next week, guys, we have to do an accentless. All right, everybody, get your. Do you have that? You ever have that feeling where you have that? You have that. You can't get that taste out of your mouth, ladies and gentlemen. All right, so we got to do that next week. And then Hobby Hawk Knives says, "Hey, gents, here's a little feedback for you. Thanks, Jeff, for the recommendation. Blue-Eyed Samurai has to be one of the best series I've watched in some time. Saltburn, however, not for me." he goes, "I'd rather be sanding Coco Bolo in the nude than watch that crap again. All the best."
Wow.
So
Jeff, really didn't like it.
Jeff won, Mareko and Craig, 2-0. On requests. However, I get a demerit because one guy before Angry Gnome said he was mad that I suggested because he didn't like all the nudity in Blue-Eyed Samurai. So actually, I'm back
really?
To zero.
All right, yeah. Especially just watch Saltburn as well then.
Yeah. I you know what? After you guys talked about Saltburn, I said to my wife, I said, "Is there anything about Saltburn? What do you know about Saltburn?" She goes, "Well, my coworker told me everything because I just didn't want to see it." And she explained what was happening. And I was just like, there's no way I'm watching this fucking movie. There is zero way. I have no interest. I have no interest in these mainstream movies dipping their toes into like weird, gross, jackass like sexual proclivities. It's like I have no interest in that.
But the thing is, it's they're just moments in the film, and the film itself is just so beautifully shot and so beautifully done.
Yeah.
But yeah, they are like jarring moments. They're like, whoa.
Yeah, it's like I heard about it. And I'm just like, I'm not interested.
Not for me.
I'm not interested in this. Justin Stinson, this is our good friend Justin Stinson, Running Man Forge. Last week we were talking about San Mai, and he said this. It was about cracking, and when you heat treat the San Mai, people. This guy was saying it was his were cracking and he had problems. Justin says, "In regards to San Mai zipper cracks, you may be able to grind down to clean steel. I've had a handful of them with wrought iron cladding, and the with a crack in the core steel. I've saved some of them by grinding." on the spine, a couple millimeters. It's part of the. It's just part of the game. Cheers.
Interesting.
Justin's a fucking awesome knife maker too. So.
And you know what? If you are grinding those down too,
Combat Abrasives makes the world's best abrasive belts for knife makers. Available in any size at unbelievable prices. Go take a look at combatabrasives.com and get 15% off with promo code KNIFETALK15. Do it now.
And just to give a shout out to our friend Brian House. Brian House on this week's episode of the Work For podcast almost beat the shit out of somebody at a Tool concert. He's telling a story where he's standing there, all 50 years old of him, standing at a Tool concert, and some dudes next to him got drunk and started vomiting.
Oh.
Started vomiting all over the place.
Jesus.
And then the real Florida man came out. Brian House turns these motherfuckers and said, "Get that guy out of here." And he's fucking got these guys to move their asses. He's an old man. Brian took care of shit.
Nice.
Meanwhile, he's standing there in a pile of barf.
Shout out to
the Work For podcast for I think the episode is called Pukerama or something like that too. So
really, right? Oh my god! Oh, and Brian was on full blast this week as well.
We had a good time, Jeff. And yes, the answer is yes. He was very good. He's always very good. To get the voice of the, you know, he got a voice that's great, and he's a very nice guy. He's a good friend of mine. I like Brian very much.
Yeah.
Well, we can keep going, or we go back to questions, whatever you want.
Let's go do a few questions, but let's tell everybody about MaritimeKnifeSupply.com. They've got everything you need. They're the one-stop shop for knife makers. Steel, belts, handle materials, tools, forges, kilns, and more. Basically, anything we talk about in the show, Lawrence gets it in stock. They're the Canadian distributor for combat abrasives. They also sell Rhino Wet and Rhino Stick. They've got it all. MaritimeKnifeSupply.com. Go take a look. And they're also Maritime Knife Supply on Instagram. Definitely worth a follow because they'll often put up deals, that kind of thing.
Speaking of which, last week we were talking about flattening. Mareko and I were talking about flattening. What are you laughing or is that coughing?
Sorry,
I thought you were like giggling. I thought something funny.
Sorry,
he's having like a salt burn situation going on over there. So Mareko and I were talking about flattening scales, and I was saying that there's this attachment that people are making where it's like a channel, and you put your scales in there, and then there are these set screws that hold it, and you can use it on a surface grinder. He's going to be selling them March 23rd. He has them on his website. The TR Maker surface grinding block holder, and then allows you to use it. It allows you to hold scales and then flatten them down on your surface grinder.
Nice.
So he listens to us, and then he fucking pipes in every time. It's unbelievable.
Nice.
We talk about it, and he has it. We talk about it, and he has it.
I'm excited. I just got a notification. My delivery is coming tomorrow from Maritime.
All right. Nice.
Yeah, just in time.
I think you put some candy in there. I'd be careful on what kind of candy. You never know.
It's not the good stuff.
I mean, wonder where it could be from. MaritimeKnifeSupply.com. Oh, boy.
Kelly, let's go back to a few questions, shall we? Where were we? Luck Knives, I believe. Any advice, tips for exhibiting at your first knife show?
What do you think, Mareko? Any tips?
Am I the only one that's exhibited?
You're not the only one who's been in business. I mean, you're at the exhibiting to be in business. So it's like there's a business things too.
Yeah, yeah. I think things to take into consideration are what your table is going to look like, how many knives you're going to bring. If they're super fancy knives, I would try to keep it limited to... Well, actually, I don't... Does he say where the show's from? Or where the show's at? Maybe Blade, Texas or something?
Yeah, I may get confused. I'm not sure if this is from Luck Knives or from JH Knife Shop, actually.
This is from Luck Knives.
This is from Luck Knives. Okay, cool.
But say you're going to Atlanta. Or if I'm going to Atlanta, what I'm trying to take into consideration is what To the Atlanta Blade Show, what my table looks like. I don't want it to look like everybody else's, because what happens is everything kind of becomes a blur in a way if everything just kind of looks the same. And so the shows do provide some sort of tablecloth or something like that, but I usually cover it up or have a banner or have some or a combination of the two. I have little placards. Like if I were to be presenting at the show, I'd probably try to take at least three or four knives, because they're kind of like higher end, fancier knives. And part of the idea behind that is, one, because they are time consuming, there's only a very limited number I can do. But if there's too many of them on the table at the same time, it almost looks like they're too easy to make. And there's just like this weird buyer psychology thing. And this is coming from experience makers who have spoken to experienced collectors over the years, and this has been their feedback, advice, I guess. And so that I've followed that. And I'm trying to think what else. Make sure you have snacks. Make sure you got water, because if you're behind the table, it's hard to feel comfortable walking away from the table, because you never know when somebody might walk up and want to buy some of your stuff. Yeah, have food and snacks handy. Get to know your neighbors, because there are going to be times when you got to run to the bathroom real quick or go grab some food maybe or whatever, or go visit somebody else's table. That way your neighbors can help kind of cover or watch your table, just more than anything, to make sure nobody's stealing your shit. You can keep your displays out usually overnight, but you usually want a secondary cover of some sort to cover stuff, even though the rooms usually get locked down, especially at Blade Atlanta. The room gets locked down, there's security that's in there walking around and kind of just keeping an eye on things. But that just keeps people from unnecessarily touching or grabbing at things. At least it should help, I think. And then, yeah, if you can... I was going to say, if you can get a second person to go with you, so a lot of you guys have wives or girlfriends or whatever, or boyfriends, whatever, bring a partner, bring a friend, somebody to help maybe also watch the table instead of having to lean on your neighbors so much. But yeah, I don't know. Those are just...
A couple of shows I've gone to, I'd add to that by saying, just sort of be present there and be welcoming to people come approaching
for
you.
Sure.
Because I've been to a few, and you just see people there, and they're just talking to their buddies, and you know, there are lots of people come over and look at the knives that they don't even acknowledge them.
Yeah,
you know?
Stand up. You know, when I've somebody gone over walks look, up for sure.
Exactly, acknowledge them. Try and get into a conversation with them. Don't just completely ignore them, because at the end of the day, if you spend a lot of money to exhibit there, you want to take advantage of every sort of possible opportunity, and just sort of brushing people off so that it's not nice. Mm-hmm.
Have your payment information ready to go. Whatever services you're using, whatever, if you're swiping cards, here's what I would do. What I would do is this. Those little swipers are bullshit. Or they're not bullshit. I just don't like them. And you can do that. That can be one thing. Or you can put your knives on your website, if you have a website, and you have like a hidden link. And when somebody wants one, they buy it off your website, and then you give it to them. That's a good way to do that if you don't want to get involved with
You could even print out like a little card with a QR code, so it just goes straight to the sale page.
Well, you could if you're only having like five or six cards or whatever, you have them already preloaded on your website, and we have hidden links on our website where there's be a password.
Yeah.
And then you give them the link, and then you give them the password, and then they buy it direct. And then all of a sudden, you're not responsible for the Wi-Fi. Like Atlanta Blade Show, I've told this story before. I was buying like $200 worth of knife scales. This dude could not get... We were walking all over the place to get a signal. This motherfucker was sweating. He was red. He had like one of them tennis hats. His hair was coming out the top, and he was pouring sweat because he could not get service. And it was he was walking around. He had to leave his table to try to get service. You got to figure out the easiest way to get payment. And if it means you have to bring yourself a hotspot, or you have to figure out a way to limit the problems, because that's all someone needs is a problem. Any problem, any way to make it not easy, you can lose a sale.
Yeah.
Especially if it's expensive. If you want to take checks, take checks. If you want to figure it out, I like the idea. Like when I go to Maker Camp, I once did that goddamn card reader and I'm like, fuck that. I'm not doing that. I'm not bringing that goddamn thing and plugging into my phone. I'm not doing it. So I had Allison load everything up on the website, and then people would have to go. They could go from the, you know, go to their room or whatever. They could buy it. I give them the password and then they buy it. And then I'll get a message saying that this was purchased by this person and I hand it to them. That was the easiest way to do it. Otherwise, you got to make it easy for people to buy stuff. Otherwise, it's like a disaster. And I think that people overlook that. That's what I would say.
Yeah, I like
and
that.
Be nice. And yeah. Be nice. Be nice.
Yeah.
Be like a pro. Like a be like you've been there before, too. Don't act like it's your first time. Act like you've been there before. That's the key to life. Sometimes you got to act like you've been there before.
Yeah.
Don't make a big deal about it.
Be ready to talk to a lot of people for a lot. Yeah. Like basically.
Don't be a dick.
All day, every day. For
and don't
two,
be a
days.
Dick.
Don't be a dick.
Don't be a dick.
Don't be a dick. In all walks. Yes. Yeah. Look, we've just had I don't know if you guys can see it, a message pop up saying, time's up. It's going to finish in 5 minutes. I don't know whether they've limited us to an hour and a
good,
half.
Let's get the fuck out of here. That's unbelievable.
Well, no, we've got 5 minutes. But I think that's a good call, especially if it's a two-day event, because I think maybe people would be, you know, later on and they've got the link. They're thinking,
yeah,
oh,
it's
like
perfect.
That knife. You know, I like that knife. Oh, I'll buy it now. I can pick it up in the morning.
Right.
Yeah, I think it works well.
And then it's on them to get the service.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Do all our ad reads. Broadback Ironworks. BroadbackIronworks.com, ladies and gentlemen. Make it the 2x72 grinder with all the attachments. Great grinder, vertical, horizontal. Love this thing. All new attachments, coming out with new attachments all the time. They're fooling around with this. They got this rotary platen, looking good. Looking forward to trying it out. All the different stuff, the adjustable work rests, surface grinders, all sorts of different stuff. BroadbackIronworks.com. Put in the promo code KnifeTalk10, 10% off.
Yeah. And why would they do that? Why would they want a broadback?
Because they don't want it. Because they're tired of going to knife print, and they're tired of getting everything AutoCADed. We got to have 5 minutes,
trying to,
right?
Trying to shoehorn these in 5 minutes. Okay, I'll tell everybody about knife print because I'm a big fan. Actually, I think it's great. If you're new to CAD, computer aided design, or whatever we want, computer aided drafting, as we're now going to call it, knife print is the place to go. Head on over to knife print. You can design in the browser, no licensing, nothing like that. And the great thing is, you can then print out the knife. They'll laser cut it and ship it to you. So great for prototyping and all that kind of stuff. KnifePrint.com. Okay. Thank you all for listening. I need to prepare an ad for next week now about these bloody sweets, yeah, don't I?
Everybody does.
Oh, geez.
Knife Talk 10 okay. Gets you all the pussy candy you can get.
Oh, yeah, that'll work. That'll work. Okay, well, we've got a few minutes. We're fine.
Oh, okay.
We're fine. Let's take another question.
I thought we were going to do the after show.
Okay, let's ready. After show. What's in the after show this week, Jeff? What we got?
Dude, I cannot handle TV anymore. I did watch, my wife and I watched this documentary on the making of We Are the World. You know, We Are the
World. I watched it last night. I thought it was amazing.
It was great, except for the fact that you're just like, are they just going to shit over everybody?
Well, Bob Dylan was basically
a fucking beating.
Bob Dylan was a meme throughout.
He didn't
took smile.
A fucking beating. God damn.
Where was that? Is that on camera?
Yeah. Oh my God. Bob Dylan took a fucking whipping.
What's this? The Perfect Night in Pop or something like that it's called. The
best my
ever
God.
Night in Pop.
I swear to God. My wife was watching
it's
it.
Funny.
And she was watching. So you got to watch the rest of this with me. I'm like, oh, this fucking song. And it is interesting because how they figured it all out. I mean, it was a lot of work.
I loved it. I loved the fact that they were in a circle and they're all waiting for their bit and they're seeing all these legends in front of them. You know,
Stevie Huey Lewis is great.
Yeah. And they're just like, oh, here we go. And it gets to their point. But then Bob Dylan was just shitting himself.
That was the best. The best was like, well, and Bob Dylan came in and he was like,
there's a choice we're making.
Breast milk science. It's a thing, and it's our thing. We are by heart. Our mission is simple.
Hey there.
Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.